And I thought the better analogy in today's world was a surfer, someone who's trying to navigate this wave of data, this incredible force that in reality, they have far less control over than they would have you think.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise the glass. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. This is Jonathan, founder and CEO of The Juice, your B2B content distribution platform. I've had a guest on the show previously that I went skydiving with. This is the first time I've had a guest on the show that I actually met at a poker table. Maybe we'll get into that story later. That can be the cliffhanger for the later portion of the episode. But before I start rambling, I'm thrilled to be joined by Kevin Davis, co-founder and CEO of Boogie Board. Kevin, tell us a little bit about your background, a little bit about Boogie Board.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Jonathan. I was the traditional guy who fell into sales out of college. I didn't really have a lot of particular focus or an area that I was going to go into. And so I just ended up as a BDR for a company called NetSuite, which a lot of people have probably heard of in the SaaS world. Through that, I climbed into a bunch of different sales roles, moved to Austin, Texas, where I still live today. And then I eventually went to work for Google Cloud when they were starting to staff up their sales operation, where I did sales and sales operations for the Austin, Texas, Google Cloud area and their European arm as well. And I eventually got to the point where I was designing territories, which is never a fun thing. And it was so unfun that I decided to start a company around it. That was about a year ago with a couple of co-founders. And so we've since created Boogie Board, which is primarily a suggestion engine for how you should design territories, and then a home to facilitate the process.
I'm fascinated by all of it. And I've got a bit of a soft spot for territory planning, which I'll get into in just a bit. And I love the BDR experience. I never was a BDR, but I almost regret it. I ended up managing a BDR team that reported into the marketing team that I was leading. And I think that's such a powerful experience to have. I mean, a challenging one for sure, but I think it makes for better professionals, no matter the role. I mean, it is a truly like foundational skill set that I think is really powerful for all professionals.
It's a welcome to the world moment when you have to cold call people all day and you kind of wonder what you're doing with your life, but you have to get through it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, before we jump into territory planning, this is the Content Cocktail Hour. We always like asking all of our guests, what are you enjoying drinking nowadays?
So I'm a little boring because I don't drink that much. My wife is actually pregnant. So on her pregnancy, I take a sabbatical from the good stuff. And so I've been drinking this.
Good for you.
This mocktail that they serve it at breakfast in the Netherlands sometimes, where I live for a little bit. And so it's basically sparkling water with apple cider vinegar and then lemon juice. So it's like extremely acidic and sort of sour. But I used to have it for breakfast in the Netherlands, and now I treat it like my evening mocktail. So a bit lame. You can have a few of those if you want. Sometimes people have a sip of it and they get mad at me because they thought it was actually something interesting, but that's what I'm going for.
I'm going to have to try that because I've heard of apple cider vinegar kind of be like a wellness, like take a shot of it. But that sounds like actually enjoyable and kind of nice. And it sounds like everything else would balance it out.
Yeah, it's refreshing. Give it a run. I'll shoot you the recipe.
All right. I love that. Well, cool. Let's jump into territory design. I mentioned a soft spot for this. I started my career at ExactTarget, and literally the very first like big project that I worked on, I was in like a rotational program. So it wasn't what I was hired to do, but it was territory design. And it's like crazy to think about a company of that size, like trusting somebody who was new to the professional world and didn't have any sales experience, any marketing experience at that time. But they kind of threw me like, here's all the data sources, here's the team structure, give us your best guess. And I think it speaks to a little bit of what you were saying. This was what, man, probably 12 years ago, but a little bit of about what you're saying. Like, it wasn't fun. It was literally just a lot of grunt work and pulling from different data sources. Is that the pain point that led you to starting Boogie Board?
Yeah, pretty much. I think often you're this maybe analyst type position. You're given the car keys to go figure out who's going to be getting which accounts, which if you've ever been in sales, which accounts you get matters a lot to your ability to hit quota, your ability to get promoted in the company. And so you end up having some passion about it. And so my original experience with territories was when I was a sales rep and I was complaining to the person with the car keys about why my account base was not as thoughtfully designed as it should have been. And then I was forced into the spot of being under the hood and realizing, oh, wow, this is like an insane exercise of data aggregation of all these different stakeholders with different opinions. And just a spreadsheet to run the show. So yeah, that was pretty much how it went for me.
And I have to imagine now in this post-COVID world, has that made, you know, territory design might have been slightly more straightforward when everybody was physically in the market they were selling in the office, you know, maybe sitting next to their team. But I have to imagine post-COVID, the distributed workforces, the distributed, completely hybrid or remote environments, has that actually made territory design more complex?
It's changed the equation a little bit. What you're talking about is basically the variable of geography and how much that plays into things and the physical presence of a person. And it used to be that you would cut up all these geographical areas and the seller would go knock on doors. If you look at any company's website, they tend to organize themselves by certain categories. They might be industry, they might be solutions. They do that with a goal of focusing their own processes. Territories are no different. They're just a way of organizing accounts to help your sales team to focus and to help your business to focus in a repeatable fashion. And so sometimes if companies have a big time, like in-person presence, they'll still keep a heavy geography focus. But with a more distributed concept, it allows them to take some of those other approaches. Like, okay, maybe I'm going to sell based on who I integrate with. Take that into account with some of the industries that we best target. And there's some more fluidity that you can build into the mix.
So this is maybe an ignorant marketer question here. I'm really good at those, but territory design is, as I interpret that, literally means physical locations, geography, like you're talking about. But is part of what you're solving for also the, maybe your sales team needs to be divided up by product line and or industry and or segment in addition to geography? Are all of those factors going into what you're building?
Yeah. For me, a territory is just a group of accounts. That group of accounts can be represented by a zip code, states, countries, or it could just be a list of a multivariable account selection process that we ran. And so we do all sorts of territories. In fact, the word territory often confuses people now. So we've even thought about kind of trying to reinvent that, but we haven't done it yet.
Oh, well, that's renaming something. That is the perfect segue into a marketing conversation here, because you know us marketers love to give things brands and names. I feel like from the marketer perspective, in my marketer lens, the trickle-down effect of territory design most literally often plays out in the field marketing. How does field marketing kind of factor into the equation you're referencing earlier around building out territories or these account lists?
So one of the considerations when I'm choosing a territory model is the synergies that it's going to create for my team. One of the positives of a geographically focused model is that I can have presence with my field marketer in the area. I have boots on the ground and I can rally people to come to an event or something along those lines. The people that are arguing for geo within a company might bring that up when they're talking about it. And then you can say, hey, it's the proverbial bar stool conversation of I know this person from there and they can all come around together. And that's what the sales rep is meant to do. But I think even field marketing is a little less geographically focused now than they were. And so you're seeing kind of a similar concept with the sales territory, I would say, it being more distributed across a set of variables beyond just geography.
And then if you are building the kind of the territory, I'm liking the territory in quotes now. If you're building that around product line or segment, that then also trickles into product marketing and kind of go-to-market strategy as a whole, right?
Absolutely. So like when I worked at NetSuite, it was just like a great example. If you go on NetSuite's website today, you can sort by product and solution. And so there's like a category for wholesale distributors. And it very clearly talks about who their wholesale distributor target clients are. That means that the sales team is organized by wholesale distribution. That means that the product team is organized by that. That means that the field marketing team has a wholesale distribution focused person. And so it's all built around that concept. And NetSuite's big enough where they also then have wholesale distribution south, wholesale distribution east. And so you can still get geographical layers built into it. But yeah, absolutely. That's an example of how you would rally around in that example in industry.
Okay. So then I'm going to just continue down this marketing kind of parallel here because I'm fascinated by the rise of account-based marketing and literally lists of accounts. We have a targeted account solution inside of our platform. And I've had prospects or customers send us their target account list, and it's like 10,000 accounts. I'm like, how targeted is this account list if it's 10,000 accounts, right? But how does territory design and building that kind of account roster for sales reps Is that the same as account-based marketing? I've always felt like account-based marketing, and now I'm just kind of ranting a little bit, but account-based marketing to me has always just felt like that's just good marketing. You should work closely with your sales team and you should coordinate around targeted accounts. But is that kind of what you're building here? Is that first step of an account-based marketing program for go-to-market teams?
Absolutely. When you think about account-based marketing or you think about territories, you think about an expression of your ideal customer profile. I always say that territories are an implementation of your ICP. So when we talk to companies and they say, we've gone through this big ICP exercise, sorry, how's it implemented? They say, well, we have it here in this like Google Doc. So no, that's not implemented. The way you implement it is by doing what you just said, which is finding the target clients based on those categories that you want to go after. Now, the difference from ABM to territories is how you're then going to approach those clients or the variables that you might use to determine they're good for ABM versus sales, right? So sales, you might have a person who has a year-long journey that's going to attempt to relate to that account in a number of different ways, whereas ABM still has that concept, but it's done differently through series of content or what have you.
When should a company start thinking about territory design? I have a feeling I might not like this answer because I have a feeling it's going to be early and I have a feeling I haven't thought about it enough yet.
You probably want to think about which accounts your reps are focusing on. And so if that's territory design, then that should happen from day one. I have three people that work at my company and I do this for myself all the time. But territory design in a more classical sense, where it's something that's implemented, measured, hypotheses are tested, there's more formal rules of engagement, doesn't usually become a pain in the ass for companies until they have 10 or 15 sales reps. They need more clear swim lanes. They're not so unsure about their ICP.
Makes sense. Okay. I've got a little bit of time then. I don't feel quite as rudimentary then. So let's maybe shift this perspective to you as founder and CEO.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, the founder-led strategy in the early days, there's always that big breaking point of having to shift from founder-led to sales-led or product-led perhaps. But there's always that breaking point when you have to get out of founder-led. A lot of times successful sales, that founder is still involved in it, right? How do you think about this from your seat as you're working with your team or you're working with other startups who are growing into that motion and how the founder should or should not be involved any longer?
I think this is one of those where there's not necessarily an empirical truth because different founders will have very different skill sets. With my background, I haven't reached that inflection point, but I already know how hard it is going to be for me to handle. I also think that the founder now has different capabilities that they didn't have a few years ago through founder-led branding. So if I think about how much more effective it is for me to send LinkedIn messages, for me to directly communicate to people because they know who I am more so than they may have been able to access that in the past, I think founder is going to be incorporated into sales throughout the journey, but as more of a spectrum. So I think of it as kind of a dilution over time as opposed to an inflection point. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's not binary. They're involved and they're not involved. It slowly progresses over time. That's really powerful. I like that analogy of the spectrum. So let's talk then about your founder journey. You were, you know, I assume a very successful sales leader. And then you decided to start a startup in maybe one of the most difficult environments ever to start a business in. Why did you do that?
It was mostly a personal thing. My wife and I, we just had our first son. I was moving back from Europe. COVID had kind of pushed us back from Europe. And it was just time to sort of think about the next like life step. And it was also becoming clear to me that I was going to be a little more constrained, feels like the wrong word to use, but I was going to be less flexible in my general life. I was like, okay, the time is now. I had always wanted to start a business. I had had a roster of people that I kept in touch with about that. And so I just started going all in on that concept without necessarily territories in mind. And I had a bunch of wacky and stupid ideas that I tried. I started a Christmas tree company for a little bit that didn't do very well. And then I eventually was like, all right, there is something to knowing what I'm talking about, knowing what I'm dealing with a little bit more. And I went back through my life and I thought about what are the real problems, the real like hairy problems that I had to deal with that I feel like I'm capable of solving. That's what led me into the abyss of territory planning.
That's cool. I relish the opportunity to ask this question because typically it gets asked of me. So I'm excited to ask it of you. What's with the name Boogie Board?
The thing with territory planning is that people think of it as like boring and terrible. And it's just got this like bad vibe to it. And so I wanted the whole thing to be like, this is like a Corona commercial now. Like everybody find your beach and like, let's have some good energy here. We had started thinking about like more nautical stuff. One of the things that had always irked me as a salesperson was being called a hunter. I never liked the concept of like eating my prey, which were like my customers. I just thought it was like weird imagery. And I thought the better analogy in today's world was a surfer, someone who's trying to navigate this wave of data, this incredible force that in reality, they have far less control over than they would have you think. And so we started getting into that world where the only way you win your customers is to submit to them like a surfer does to an ocean.
I love that, riding the wave. Most of our listeners, sales and marketing professionals, what's maybe some learnings that you, startup founder, I assume leading go-to-market for the business, as you think about your own sales and marketing motion, what are some lessons you've learned along the way?
There's so many. I think like in a macro picture, I assume that because I was coming from Google that I was going to be like pretty cutting edge. I just kind of thought that I would probably knew what was going on. And then I think I came to understand how much faster you can move at a small company, how much new technology you can experiment, and then how much more breadth I can have as an individual throughout that. So there's like this huge kind of macro lens. And what that actually works itself into is spending a lot of time writing, which is really hard for me to make time for that. Trying out like new collaboration tools, like getting into Notion. Like I'd never been in Notion, just like a little thing like that. Understanding how social media like truly works, getting like content production stood up. There's so much that all comes from me thinking that I had a modern GTM mindset, if you will, and realizing I didn't.
I would guess you're being a little overly harsh on yourself there, but you mentioned content, you mentioned go-to-market. What does that look like? What does content marketing look like for you? What does your go-to-market motion look like at Boogie Board, a smaller company?
Our strategy, because we are very small, has basically been to write all of the content that we need to run our business and open it up and try to open source it. And so we've written all the guides, all of the practical directional things that we want to advise our customers to do, partially as a way of aligning internally, and then going through the process of learning to make them beautiful. One of my co-founders is an excellent designer, which really helps. We have a video podcast as well, which is kind of like this, that we've stood up to just interact with more users or potential users of our product. And then there's just like, okay, now I think we've got a good idea of creating these things that are focused and make sense and help us, even if no one reads them ever, they still help us and we can use them in sales cycles. And then how do we distribute that? I would say we're still working through that. We've started to sponsor some communities. I don't know if you've ever thought about content distribution at all. I'm just kidding, of course. But yeah, that's kind of the next layer for us.
It's fascinating, right? That's why I built The Juice, is because I felt like myself as a marketer was spending maybe 95% of my time, energy, effort, and resources on creation. And then distribution was such an afterthought. The more I thought about that, the more I was like, that does not make any sense. And I think now what's obviously interesting is the cost of content creation, the amount of energy going into content creation is like going towards zero, right? Like it's not going to ever be zero, and especially not like really high quality content, but the ability to create content's only gotten that much easier, and distribution is still a real pain point for many. If it is any validation though, we look at data regularly and coach our customers through what the data we're seeing from our platform. In templates or toolkits, they outperform any other content format on our platform by a factor of 3x. And so we're always coaching our customers saying, give away what you know. I think one, that's something that AI can't actually replicate yet. And two, we as marketers, again, are guilty sometimes of thinking like people want to be entertained by B2B content. There's a lot of good positive energy there. But so many times when people are engaging with B2B content, it's because they've got a very acute like pain point or very urgent problem or question they're trying to answer or solve. And they just need that template, or they need to be told exactly what to do. So I think you're onto something there by sharing not only things that are helping you internally, but can help your prospects and potentially your customers as well. I actually think that's a super savvy strategy.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. It's interesting you bring up kind of the entertainment layer, because I think that's the trap we've mostly avoided so far, but the pull does come to you when you see something on LinkedIn that goes viral and you think, okay, maybe I need to be a little more entertaining. Maybe I need to be a little bit more engaging. And so we are thinking about, just from a design standpoint, like, how do we best convey our voice so that people can hear us authentically and make sure that we do come through in the consumption of it? But yeah, there's also the fact that I'm just not entertaining yet. We'll see. Maybe someday.
Obviously, you want the content to be entertained, but I think it is a trap when people like forget about this needs to actually help somebody, and we're not just building something for clicks on LinkedIn or whatever it may be. And I think marketers, especially in our environment where we're marketing to marketers, there's this like tribe mentality of we're marketing, so we want other marketers to think highly of us instead of like what our actual customers want. But yeah, it's that's very like meta, but that's where we're at sometimes. What advice would you have for maybe other professionals who are considering making the same leap you did into starting something?
For me, it was getting engaged with the right people early and asking for help in a way that was repeatable and made it easy to help. When I started this, it was just like, I don't know if you had this experience, but it was like an unbelievable positive referendum on humanity, because I would tell people about what I was doing. And they would say inevitably, like, how can I help? They were so excited to help. Bosses, former colleagues that I barely knew. We had a competitor who I talked to, and wow. It's just like, oh yeah, you think territory planning sucks too? Like, yeah, it's great that you think that. And so I would say expect that kind of positivity, but be able to capture it, because you're going to need a village. And if you can allow people to help you in a really clean way, if you ask them for something succinctly, start with people that you're okay annoying, because you're going to be annoying. I look back at some of the length of my initial emails or whatever, and it's kind of incredible. But yeah, if you can rally your team and let them help you, it'll be a good thing.
I love the nugget there of like, know what to ask for. I have learned along the way that the people who are the best at offering to help, they're like, let me know how I can help. I could do A, B, or C, or like the best use of my network could be A, B, or C. And that's something I always try to do when I'm like, let me know how I can help. Like, perhaps it could be this, and actually like nudge people down that path. But I think you're right. I love that reflection on humanity. But I think like you have to be ready to activate that offer for help in a really meaningful way. Well, this time has flown by. I always love talking to founders and entrepreneurs. I could pick your brain all day, but we do always end these conversations. What's an unpopular opinion that you have as it pertains to B2B sales or marketing?
My unpopular opinion is that things are much more the same today than they are different from 10 years ago, from 20 years ago, when it comes to engaging with a B2B buyer and trying to have them become a delighted customer of your product. I think the tooling is different. I think it can look different. It can feel different. I wear a t-shirt and shorts now when I do it. And I do it from a guest room instead of a beautiful corporate office in Boston. But realistically, the goal is the same. And it's to delight customers over a long period of time to build a durable business. And so I find some hope in thinking that there's a real commitment to the fundamentals that we can make that'll hopefully breed results in the long term.
That is so good. The more things change, the more they stay the same. I love it. Well, Kevin, if you want to learn more from you or learn more about Boogie Board, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, hit me up on LinkedIn, Kevin Davis, Boogie Board. Our website is boogieboard.ai. My Calendly is linked up directly to both things, and have an open Calendly policy, and I'm here for the connection. So I appreciate the time, Jonathan. This is awesome.
I love that. We'll get all the relevant links in the show notes. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us today. To all of our watchers and listeners, thanks for joining another episode. Until next time, cheers. Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.